I don't think we've met before, but I'm the referee on this field.
Leinster could offer me $5 million a year, I wouldn't go.
It is Tommy Moe!
Robbie Weekly.
Little reverse pass.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the 42 Rugby Weekly. I hope you're having a good Friday so far and looking forward to the weekend. We've got Munster against an All Blacks 15 and the start of the November Tests as well, with the All Blacks for real travelling to Allianz Stadium to face England. I'm not sure I can get used to that. I used to take an exception, Murray Kinsella, when it was the Aviva and hung on calling it Lansdowne Road for a long time. I feel like when it's another crowd stadium, I'm just going to go with the flow. You've made your bed, England, as far as I'm concerned. I've seen a lot of Allianz Stadium at Twickenham's as well, which I guess is a solid compromise. Anyway, what the hell am I talking about? How are you keeping?
I'm good. I'm enthused about what's ahead. It's like crisp autumnal weather at the moment. It's that freshness in the air, and I can almost sense the excitement of going to the Aviva on a Friday night for the All Blacks in town, of the other tests to come, of all the other brilliant rugby we're going to see, including that England All Blacks match this weekend. Fiji are playing Scotland as well with a pretty experimental team at test level anyway. So it really kicks off, and obviously Munster are welcoming the All Blacks 15 as well. So it's a nice kind of taster of what's ahead, and it's going to be a busy month. I just love these test windows. I love seeing what the coaches have cooked up in the quiet period between their last game and now, certainly with Ireland, what they've planned. I can't wait to see selections. I can't wait to see who the stars of the series are, because though there's no trophy on the line, there's a few of those kind of weird meaningless trophies that no one's heard of until they see them after the match lifting it again. But it's always ferocious, and it's always fascinating to see the best of the Southern Hemisphere and the best of the Northern Hemisphere coming up against each other. So I'm very excited.
It's been a mad week, particularly down in the Southern Province, where they will face this New Zealand 15 with Ian Costello as interim head coach. And Costello was put in the unfortunate position, I suppose, of having to field media questions about Graham Rentry's departure from Munster during Thursday's press conference. And he really couldn't say anything more. So taking it back to the start, when you found out about this story at the same time as most of the rest of the world, and only about half an hour after Munster's senior players, or their senior squad, I should say, were informed. I mean, what was your reaction? And are you able to make sense of it at all 5 days later or 4 days later?
It's been such a strange week, and I certainly didn't expect this to be the story of the week. Everyone thought it was going to be quiet enough, and you'd just have that Munster game at the end of it. And certainly some of their squad were very shocked and surprised by this. Others weren't, and that's clear. But yeah, it's been a tumultuous couple of days, and I suppose the frustration for Munster fans is there's no more public clarity shed on it with yesterday's media briefing. And I get that from Munster's point of view. Maybe you can allude to something behind the scenes, give some little tidbits of what exactly is happened, but that wasn't the case, and they're just trying to focus on a game which is really important. They need to deliver a performance. I think they will, sold out Thomond Park, and they've got this great relationship with Kiwi Rugby, so it might actually be a nice thing for everyone to have at the end of such a strange week. I suppose I've ended the week where pretty much I started around the chat immediately after the news was announced, and we had a piece on Wednesday trying to make sense of it all. And certainly my impression is that it was initiated by Munster and the RFU, that they've led that process that's resulted in Rentry leaving, that what we spoke about on the pod on Tuesday, that in some ways it had been coming for a while, that there was, you know, the rumoured fallout with Peter O'Mahony last season. There was murmurings of a little bit of unhappiness in camp towards the end of last season, and that had all been in the background, and that was, you know, there was an awareness of that on all sides. But certainly it seems that the 2 week tour to South Africa brought everything to a head, and whatever issues were there, maybe as well with the coaching staff and a lack of probably alignment, and, you know, a slight rift maybe in that area, that was all magnified while they were on tour. And it sounds like it was a very unhappy tour. And I mean, the performances weren't good, and even how Munster went about playing it, it looked poor. I thought even from the Sharks game, from the very opening exchanges of the game, 43 seconds, they've switched off and they've conceded a try. And yeah, often those things they happen in rugby, but when a team is consistently doing them, it probably points to issues in the background. And from what I understand, almost immediately or you know, within a very short space of time of them returning, this process had kicked off and Rountree had left. So that side of it, there's also the other side of it where you totally understand that Graham Rountree would have had frustrations. You know, he led Munster to a trophy, something what his four predecessors couldn't do with a squad that most of us had said don't have a trophy in them that season. They did it. He finished top of the log last season, was coach of the year. He probably had his frustrations around certain things like bringing players in. You know, last season they looked for a sanction on an NIQ Lucid and or Hooker. They wanted to reinforce that area. Everyone's criticised them for not doing it, but it wasn't sanctioned by the RFU to go and get NIQ in that area. So that was really frustrating. You look at things like the Frisch scenario where that was out of his hands completely, but he lost his most unorthodox creative player, a guy who'd become so integral to the team. The Snyman thing and the Klein factor in that. And obviously that's not, you know, some of that is just kind of unfortunate that it happened and it panned out the way it did. And the RFU have their policies around NIQ players in the same position, but all that stuff would have been frustrating for him. And no doubt he has frustrations with, in the same way that some senior players seem to have had with him, I'd say that was reciprocated as well, because we know that he wanted to completely change this squad. My understanding was that they, you know, they started at a point of thinking, okay, Conor Murray and Peter Manning are going to be out of RFU contract. Do we make that move now? Do we sever those ties now and move on? That obviously didn't happen, and maybe he wanted that process to be quicker. So though my impression is that it's been initiated by the Munster and RFU kind of bigwigs here, like Rountree, maybe he's better off as well. You know, I'd say it was a really tough time for him. We spoke on Tuesday about the pressure of the job. It clearly weighed on him, and he cared so much that I'd say it was a deeply stressful place to be in. It's just it's no joke of a job. There's so much going on. There's so much expectation, especially when you win a trophy. And you think maybe that just lifts the pressure because you have that in the bank. But I think it added to the expectation level. So there was a whole lot going on here. And it's sad that this is the way it ended, because clearly the outpouring of affection for Rountree shows how Munster fans view him and always will view and always have fond memories of him. But behind the scenes, it clearly wasn't as joined up and as smooth sailing. So in a kind of longer term view, it was maybe coming a little bit. And then when they went to South Africa, that just didn't go well. And clearly the decision was made to act now rather than maybe prolong what seems to have been a bit of, you know, suffering on all sides, not just on one side.
It feels like it was very much an imperfect storm where various conditions combined to create something approaching toxic, where it was no longer of benefit to either side, as you say. And look, the fallout with Peter Omani has been well cited at this point and denied by Graham Rountree last month, as you would naturally understand him to do. But like, it was around contractual negotiations, and this is one of the examples where or in which it illustrates how difficult it is to be Munster's head coach, probably more so than any of the other provinces. At Munster, you're like a tribal elder in the degree to which you're being pulled and dragged to various duties, the way you're supposed to be an ambassador for a community in Limerick and beyond. And Rountree very much embraced that, being a man of the people. He didn't hide himself away when results were bad. He was still down the butchers or still down the local spar or whatever. But like, people would let him know if their thoughts, if things weren't going well. And you know, like, he was extremely visible. So you've that pressure, and then you have this additional pressure of having to sit down and negotiate players' contracts, which is not something that the head coach does at, say, Connacht, at Ulster, at Leinster, to my knowledge. At least they are involved in the process, but I don't know if they're sitting down trashing out the deals, like, because that would be where, like, it's a conflict zone, right? So chances are, if you're going to fall out with a player, or there's a higher chance, I should say, that you're going to fall out with a player if you're sitting down in the room with them telling them, particularly if they put 15 odd years into a club, I don't see a future for you, when you've only been there 5 years yourself, you know. I don't know. I just think, like, say, Ulster, you've Brink Cunningham, who looks after a lot of that. Leinster have Guy Easterby, Connacht of Tim Allnut. And it feels like Rountree was more central to that process than Munster, which, when you're dealing with very, very influential players who then feel as though they've been disrespected if they haven't been offered a new deal, or if they've been told that Munster are going to try and drive on without them due to budgetary constraints or whatever it was. It's very easy to poison the well when that is the situation, isn't it?
Well, just on the contrary thing, as far as I'm aware, nearly every head coach ends up getting involved in this stuff. Yes, there's often figures who are supposed to remove that from them, but they're so involved in the decisions, and they're very often involved in, you know, coaxing and influencing players to get it done, because these things can drag out. Or, you know, if you're the one making a decision to move on from someone, you should, like, in my opinion, you should be the one who sits down with them and tells them face to face, in as amicable a way as you can. But it's rarely amicable. This kind of stuff happens in all clubs all the time, we should say. You know, players have great discontent towards their head coaches all the time. Any punter, anyone who's listening to this, probably feels pissed off with their boss a lot of the time, actually. And that's just a common thing in life. But in sports environments, when that disconnect happens on both sides, again, I should stress, it's very hard to remain a kind of high functioning, high performing team. There has to be quite a good connection there. They don't have to be mates, but they both have to kind of believe in each other. And again, that does work both ways. You know, you look back and now you think Johan van Graan, he made a good decision to kind of do what he did, really, didn't he? He'd already agreed to stay on. Then the Bath thing comes up and he goes, right, this is my chance. And he's flying it over there now. And I suppose that's the challenge for Munster now. You know, I think I said this at the time when van Graan left. It's like they kind of have to back it up now, because, again, there was mutterings that relationship wasn't great at all times with senior players and van Graan. And in fairness, they went and won a trophy and that pointed to a bit of success. But if there's going to be another change, you've got to respond well to that. And at the same time, it's like there's players in the squad who are definitely disappointed that Rowntree's not there, who got on great with him, who he promoted and helped develop, and who he gave great memories to. And maybe they won't win a trophy again in their career, and he'll be the coach who led them to it. So there's all different sides to it. It's not just like people want just one answer with these things, but that's not often the case. And then you think into other factors like the RFU, what they need from a head coach. They're the ones at the end of the day, David Humphreys, the performance director, who sanctions and finalizes all decisions on head coaches who are direct employees of the RFU, and their job is to help get players into an Ireland squad in good nick, in good mental space, in good form. And so all that plays a role in it. But yeah, I'll just end the week with a kind of sadness that this is the way it goes. And I suppose a reminder again of how tough a job it is to be a head coach. You can win a trophy and 2 years later you're gone, and things can turn, you know, it can be gradual at first, but then it can happen fast, and you're on the outside. Rowntree has an unbelievable record in the game. I wonder, will he be a head coach again? It almost surprised me if he did that role straight away again. But his scrum coaching, which he continued to do at Munster, and where they, you know, despite the lack of reinforcement that he and others wanted for years, they continue to perform well in that area. So I'd say he'll be in great demand, and I wouldn't imagine, I can imagine him getting a big job if he goes specific to that area again, or forwards coaching. So he'll be fine. I imagine obviously there's a payout in this regard, and, you know, hopefully that kind of stuff will make the off-pitch stuff a little bit easier, because there's that factor to it as well. You know, he's made a home in Limerick. People, they know him. They see him walk around all the time. His family are here. You know, the connections are strong after 5 years. So you have to factor that into it all. And at the same time, Munster just, you know, they're already moving on. The process is, the wheels are in motion, and they've got to get on firstly with a game this weekend, and then in the slightly medium term or longer term to set themselves up for, you know, getting out of this as quickly as possible and being successful and appointing a new permanent head coach as well. So there's lots going on in Munster this week. There always is. They're a beast. They're an absolute beast. And that's why it will be attractive to some coaches, because it's a massive club, you know, well known across the world. Like, everyone in Ireland is obsessed with them, no matter what province they're from. They're interested in what's going on in Munster. And while it may not always have been best run or smoothly running, there's still great potential there, and obviously a big fan base as well. So I'll be fascinated to see or hear of applications from outside. But at the moment, it sounds like it may be an internal succession plan.
I will say the way Munster have communicated this has probably left a vacuum, which is unhelpful to fans. I think fans deserve more as well. Even if it was just a, like, what I mean by that is, I completely understand in a situation in which it's framed as a mutual agreement, or it was a mutual agreement, you really can't say much. There are non-disclosure agreements, for example, that go into these things typically, but that there isn't even a party line as to why this happened leaves the vacuum. Like, if you read the initial statement, it's just that Graham Rowntree and Musser have parted company, and there's just no reason at all given. And Ian Costello was unable to give even a single reason yesterday as well. So that is unhelpful, I think, to like the discourse around this, because you have people who will point to fallouts with senior players and blame the players, or they'll point to Rowntree and blame him, or point upstairs to Ian Flanagan or whatever. And it lends itself towards a rumour mill. Like, some of the shite that's been banded about the place is obviously nonsensical as well. So I don't know. I think it may have been helpful for them to just go with the A line. We weren't really pleased with the direction in which this was going, and we felt it was best for both parties to, you know, something along those lines, even make it results-based, as much as it probably wasn't.
And it would have been difficult to buy that, I guess, because, yes, the short term, as I say, the performances and nature of them weren't... The Zebra performance in particular was really, really poor, and there was different issues there. But if you look at it in a bigger picture point of view, they'd made progress on the pitch. Yeah, Champions Cup, they would have wanted more. But if you look at the squad and the resource of other clubs, then you have to be realistic as well. But you're right, there is a vacuum. And I mean, that might be as easy as saying we both felt on both sides that this, you know, had worn down or had run its course. Because again, that happens. I often think things run their course in rugby and in sport before someone actually makes a move and makes a change. And then you get the long-term acrimony and sometimes people's legacies being really tarnished. So you could frame it like that. But at the same time, I understand there's sensitivity and, as you say, all sorts of agreements behind the scenes. So it's a tricky spot to be in.
Ronald O'Gara has obviously ruled himself out of the job, which he's done, I feel, 15 times before anyway. And he made the point in his Irish Examiner column that he doesn't really see himself becoming interested in the job at any point in his coaching career. He's contracted to La Rochelle until 2027. He wants to win the Bouclier there. He wants to win another Champions Cup. He was upfront about the fact that he has a better chance of winning a European Cup with La Rochelle than he does at Munster, and doesn't feel it would be the right move for him to take them at a low ebb. And he was quite realistic about where Munster were. I'm sure it was hurtful reading to some degree to some fans. He spoke about environmental issues behind the scenes, the financial pressures that Graham Rowntree faced, that his predecessors have faced as well, and compared even the dynamic between Munster and Leinster to that of Cardiff City and Manchester City. So I guess an English championship football club and a European giant in the Premier League. But he maintains that it's still a good gig for somebody. And he stressed his belief that the answer is inside the building, already inside the building, is I think how he coined it. Where he backed Mike Prendergast to pretty much take the top job. He suggested, I suppose, a tandem between Prendergast and Leamy, and then potentially bringing in a third, more senior, more seasoned sounding board kind of figure. So that would be a step up for Prendergast to director of rugby, as Rod saw it. Leamy possibly as kind of a head coach, or again, sort of working in a tandem with another more senior coach. It would require a reshuffle. I know we really don't know the answer to this, but like, to your mind, would something like that be the most likely outcome at the moment?
Yes, I mean, that was the word from early on in the week, really, that the kind of early favoritism was lying with Prendergast. But we don't know if he wants that responsibility and to step up as a head coach for the first time. He's had big roles. He has a big role in Munster. He's very influential in France. He was influential in Racing, in Oyonnax, in Stade Francais. So he's had a lot of experience in the game and has seen lots of different things and lots of different clubs. And I suppose the key is that he remains an on-pitch coach, which often when someone becomes a head coach, they have to deal with so much other stuff off the pitch that they get dragged away from that. So I think it's really key, if he was to be promoted, that he would be still leading the attack and even a wider role, you know, kicking and having a say in the philosophy of the defence and all that kind of thing. So probably, yeah, you would want someone who's going to do the media and negotiate contracts alongside that. And Ian Costello's role obviously involves a fair bit of that, the bigger picture stuff. But maybe they'd feel they could bulk up the direct coaching staff with an experienced figure. Obviously, that comes at a high cost for someone like that with experience. So, yeah, it'll be interesting because Prendergast hasn't been in that position. He never strikes me as someone who like seems to love doing, say, the media stuff, which is such a monotonous and big part of the job. You're constantly doing interviews before, after matches, in the week. You've got to be aware of what's going on in that sphere. And he's someone who, you know, is obsessed with rugby and has proven really popular with Munster's players. My understanding is the squad would really support a promotion for him if he was to be the key guy. There will be, even if it is from within, it seems like there will be a shuffle of the coaching staff. There's even a rumour early on that Peter O'Mahony may move into a coaching role and or has an interest in it. So that'll be one to follow potentially. But I think, yeah, there'll be candidates from the outside. But the issue there is if you're keeping Prendergast and Leamy, Prendergast is attack, Leamy is defence. If you get in a head coach who has a very strong, say, attacking philosophy, someone like Leon McDonald, who was mentioned to me, who is an attack coach essentially, but has been a head coach, then where does Prendergast sit in that? He probably doesn't. So you've got to consider that. The RFU are happy that young-ish, you know, Irish coaches, I'm saying they're experienced at the same time. In Prendergast's case, him and Leamy are in the system now and developing their careers. You don't want to shed that either. So I'd imagine it'll be a similar looking Munster coaching staff in the end. Sometimes when you lose a head coach, the new person in charge will want a completely different coaching ticket, but it doesn't feel like Prendergast and Leamy will be. It doesn't feel like they won't be part of the picture moving forward. And Prendergast, yeah, as far as I can tell, at the moment it looks like he's the favourite.
Peter O'Mahony will play at Thomond Park against New Zealand 15-mer, and he'll join up with Ireland then on Monday in the hopes of featuring against another New Zealand 15 at the Aviva Stadium, which is kind of classic, I guess, based on what's happened over the last 12 months or so. Just that strained relationship between Peter O'Mahony and the All Blacks. But, excuse me, the rest of that Munster team, Dermot Kilgallen making his first start, it's probably a stronger looking team than maybe we had anticipated while trying to concoct it in our heads about a week or so ago. What do you make of it, or what stood out to you?
Yeah, there's enough there for an experienced enough spine and players who have kind of good leadership roles even within the squad. It's great for them that Manny is available. It wouldn't shock me if he delivers a big player to match performance and has a few line-out steals and big jackal moments and rallies the crowd. I can even kind of see those classic photos that he tends to be part of if it is one of those performances. It is a strong team, and you know, for a fixture like this, maybe some people think, oh, you know, it's a exhibition match, why not spring in even more youth in there? Obviously Shea McCarthy is starting and there's lots of academy presence on the bench, but they absolutely want to deliver as strong a performance and a win along with that as they can in front of a sold out Thomond Park. It's so cool that they have this fixture, I think, that they have this relationship with Kiwi rugby, where, you know, you've seen the All Blacks media like hyping this and talking about the rivalry, and that's a very cool thing to have. So it's not that surprising that they've gone as strong as possible for this game. Yeah, they're still missing lots of guys through injury, but as you say, there's a good international experience throughout it. I'll be really interested to see how Kilgallen can get going with Munster, who before his injury at Connacht last season was flying with them, and then he had the frustration of coming to Munster and getting over injury, but he was back for Gary Owen last weekend, and he's a guy who could add a bit of dynamism to that back line. A couple of the young guys do get a chance on the bench. Ronan Fox at tight head, who there have been high hopes for. He's a big unit. Hopefully they'll see him kick on. And Evan O'Connell apparently is flying it, really. He's mature beyond his years, and he could accelerate as a second row. So lots of points of interest, and I've no doubt that it'll be a weird enough occasion for some Munster fans going to it and having a bit of that sadness that Rowntree is not there, but that probably is going to lead into a very emotional kind of raucous atmosphere to energise this Munster team when they need it.
It's a fun looking New Zealand team as well, and the All Blacks team to face England, I know, stirred something in you based on a tweet I saw last night, which was just that you looked at these two teams, England and the All Blacks, and suddenly it was November and you were really excited for the 5 weeks to follow. What did you make of both of those 23s?
Well, it's really interesting because it's obviously a rematch of the summer tests when England would have been frustrated not to have got the job done and won a test when they were in both those battles. But New Zealand will feel they've really kicked on in the months since under Razor Robertson and getting a sense of exactly how they want to play. And you've probably seen that. What excites me is probably is the sheer dynamism of lots of the individuals. Jason Ryan is a forwards coach, and he's a brilliant forwards coach with the All Blacks. He's a Maul expert extraordinaire. So it makes sense to have a big focus on that kind of side of the game, of being good at kicking, particularly when they come up to the north. And you've seen Beauden Barrett step into the shoes that Damien McKenzie had kind of filled all year. Barrett's a more experienced game manager, probably just has a better understanding of that tactical kicking element that you need on a tour when you're coming up north. So I'd say they'll try and be very solid in that regard. But then you've got Will Jordan starting at fullback, who, you know, he's been playing on the right wing a lot for the Kiwis in the last couple of years, but fullback seems to be his best position. And when he gets onto the ball in slightly unstructured situations, he's just lethal. The same with, obviously, Ardie Savea. Wallace Setiti has been a phenomenal breakout for them in the back row. If people haven't seen him in Super Rugby, you're going to really enjoy seeing him this month. He is so explosive. He's got great feet. He's got great balance through contact. He makes a lot of post-contact meters. The likes of him and even then Tamaiti Williams and Pasilio Tosi, the sub tight head, they're massive units who are really dynamic as well. So they're kind of a classic Kiwi team in that regard, that they really can score in the blink of an eye. Cortez Ratama is another one, the scrum half who's come in. He's only got, 8 or 9 caps, and he's been dynamic and clever with his use of the ball. So they're not quite the finished article. They haven't been all season, and it's definitely been, there's been a feeling of kind of transition and finding their feet under Robertson, but loads of reasons to be excited. Leinster fans will be glad to see Jordy Barrett back this weekend, maybe not next weekend when they're playing Ireland, but good to see he got over his injury very quickly, and he's obviously a key man for the Kiwis. And then England, I suppose, responding to the upheaval, is that too strong? I don't think so, with Jones and Joel Abb coming in to lead that defence. They did cause the Kiwis problem with their blitz D and how hard they were on the edge in those two games. And it'll be fascinating to see how the Kiwi approach changes. They did try to get around it in July with a second playmaker and often pulling passes a little bit deeper. They got caught a few times. So I can't wait to see if there are tweaks, first of all, from England, but also how the Kiwis go about going after that. And aside from those setbacks on the coaching staff with Alan Walters as well, England have been tracking really nicely. You look at Emmanuel Feyawaboso turning into one of the most dangerous wings in international rugby, and Tommy Freeman the same in a little bit of a different profile on the other wing. There's a nice balance, I think, to the England team, and they've got their own dynamism as well. So it's going to be a really juicy matchup. It's a lovely way to really launch these November tests. And obviously with the All Blacks flying to Dublin straight after, you've got to have a close eye on this one and how they're shaping up to take on Andy Farrell's men.
I agree with you that England should be good and probably will be good. I still fancy a New Zealand win here just because they're not coming in quite cold, having played Japan, and like they should be in, I know, different 23 at that time, but just having spent a little bit more time together, it's not like they're opening their tour with this game. And I fancy them in a squeaker, to be clear. I think it'll be like a brilliant game that New Zealand just about edge. I also fancy a New Zealand win in Limerick, so it could be a good weekend for the Kiwis. But which way are you leaning in both?
I'm probably leaning towards England, just home advantage and the familiarity of being on home soil. I think it does add something. Yeah, I think that All Blacks 15 team is very talented. The only question for them is, like, they arrived in drips and drabs at the start of this week. They had guys coming from Japan. They had guys coming from winning the NPC, presumably celebrating and getting on a flight, and another kind of core group who arrived a little bit earlier. So it is tough to get a cohesive performance on the back of that, even if some of them are familiar or even teammates, and the coaching staff know a lot of them very, very well. There's just so much talent, though. Sean Stevenson, everyone probably knows him at this stage for the Chiefs. You're kind of baffled how he's not made more progress with the All Blacks. Quinn Tupaia, Finlay Christie, Harry Plummer, George Barrow, they're all senior All Blacks. And then the guys in the team who aren't, like Kini Naholo, Waisaki's younger brother, just lethal athletes. Shafi Haki on the other wing has been brilliant for the Crusaders, even amidst their kind of troubling year. And the list goes on of the athletic and the skill talent in that team. So it's definitely a very tough task for Munster, but they should have certainly more cohesion and familiarity and that emotional occasion should bring out the best in them. So I'll actually go the opposite to you. I'll go Munster and England. And then the other game, Fiji, like that Fijian team is just a little bit callow at this level. So it's probably the Scots, isn't it?
100%. If something happens in that game, we can talk about it on Monday for sure with Birch, 42 subscribers. But at the moment, it's actually just tough to talk about that Fijian team without having seen it together at all, really. I'd expect a Scottish win there. Look, if Munster win that game, we've seen it before, that type of fixture can be rejuvenative for them. And as you say, if it was a number of players who were unhappy with the direction in which things were moving, then this is your chance to put it right, put up a big performance, and maybe there's credence to what you were suggesting. All will be revealed. As I say, we'll chat about it on Monday, Mar. I'm looking forward to it.
Can't wait. Thanks, Gav.
Thanks a million to you as well. Thanks, everyone at home. It's the 42.ie/extra. If you want to join us for additional podcasts every week, we'll also have immediate post-match pods from the Aviva Stadium throughout Ireland's November series. So it's a good time to jump on board the 42.ie/extra. That's it from us. Have a great weekend, everyone. Take it easy. But the boys in the better land. You're always talking about the boys in the better land. The boys in the better land.